हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Start from 92. An object does not exist absolutely, however, but exists sometimes, somewhere, somehow, then someone by some means will try to attain or avoid it, since it is capable of achieved or avoided. Syadvad argues that all objects are either substances, dravya, or its derivative, paryaya. Those which are substances are real. Those which are derivatives are unreal. Has everybody told the stock market that? Paryaya is a particular condition of the substance. Thus, from them, there is manifestation of real by the existing and manifestation of unreal by the non-existing. Right? You're manifesting unreal by the non-existent. Makes a lot of sense. Yes.
Manifestation of real by the existing and manifestation of unreal by the non-existing. So this is very strange.
Yes, it is. It is. Adikarna 6. Jainism refuted. Ekasmin asambhava dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.2, 33-36. Adikarna Prakashika. Here in this Adikarna, the Sutrakar aims to refute two Jain doctrines. One, their theory of uncertainty is faulty because it has the defect of conflicting qualities existing in one object simultaneously. If quote-unquote uncertainty is intrinsic in objects, then the results gained are uncertain that leads to frustration, bewilderment, and chaos. However, this is unobservable. Two, their theory of jiva having the size of material body is also incorrect, since the soul is subtle and has a fixed identity. Material categories like size only pertain to gross and subtle bodies and cannot be applied to the soul. Summary of Adikarna 6. 1. Shamshaya. Is the Jain theory of jivas and padarthas correct or not? Purvapaksha, the argument. It is correct because it uses the process of refuting seven propositions, right? If it had been six or eight, it would be wrong, but it does seven, so it's... Right? Siddhanta, Srila Vyasadeva says this is totally bogus. And... yes. Says Sutra 2.2.3. Naikasmin asambhavat. Not certain. You know, not. Ekasmin, in one substance, asambhava, because of the impossibility. The categories cannot be accepted because of the impossibility of contrary qualities existing in one object. Footnote 50. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold misery. Srimad Bhagavatam 112. Basically he says all these philosophies, they cannot understand the absolute truth because of not being pure at heart. Because their object is not to understand themselves as the soul and how they are servants of the Lord. That's the last thing they want to identify. Even if they say we're the soul, but that we're servant of the Lord, that's not happening. Right? Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar begins to refute the Jain doctrine of certainty, uncertainty. Contradictory qualities possessed by one object is untenable. It is not uncertain whether people drink water instead of fire to quench their thirsts. Unless they're in Moscow. It is not uncertain whether there is a difference between heaven and hell. If all things inherent were uncertain, then it would be possible to establish a specific path to some goal. It would not be possible to establish a specific path to some goal. So they're saying we have a path, and that's certain. But if this, by this doctrine of uncertainty, then nothing actually gives a result. It's uncertain. You know, it's like this modern theory of it's all by chance. Right? So, but if it's all by chance, why are there laws and they're governing and saying, no, this is the path? You understand? So that's the difficulty. Shigovinda Basu. Siddhanta. These categories proved by their logic cannot be accepted. Why? Because it is impossible that contrary qualities reside in one object, ekasmin, simultaneously. One never sees an object which is cold and hot at the same time. Moreover, the sadhana for attaining swarga, liberation, or avoiding hell is useless because everything is uncertain. And swarga, hell, and liberation are thus mutually confused. Mm-hmm. Since a pot would have uncertain elements, a person wanting water would use fire instead of a pot, or a person wanting to build a house would use air instead of wood. One cannot say that because of the difference, the person desiring water will avoid fire, because there is also non-difference between them, and thus you would use fire to get water. Because that's the thing, they're saying everything's uncertain. So then that makes everything uncertain, and especially their philosophy, that becomes uncertain. There are categories defined, a means of defining, using the sevenfold logic. There is the definer, the jiva, and there is the result of defining. However, all these become uncertain by the contrivance of it may somehow be. Mm-hmm. Right? Remember, it may somehow be, it may somehow not be, it may somehow be and not be. Mm. Right? Like that. And then I think they reverse it. It may somehow not, you know, yeah, not exist. It may somehow exist, it may somehow not or exist or not exist. Yeah. Okay. However, all these become uncertain by the contrivance of it may somehow be, with qualities of existence and non-existence. The logic is as delicate as a spider's thread. What is the need to examine it further? Footnote 51. Srila Jiva Goswami refutes the Jain's conjecture of coexisting dualities in objects, so it is not based on shastras. Naikasmin asambhavat. The categories of objects existing and non-existing simultaneously cannot be accepted because of the impossibility of contrary qualities existing in one object. Mm-hmm. Brahma Sutra 2233. In the above sutra, the proposal of simultaneous existence and non-existence of objects in the universe by the process of indescribability, anir vachaniya, is completely rejected. If everything arising with duality is created by the jiva's ignorance, and the sarupa of the jiva's is none other than Brahman, there is no separate being called Ishwara who identifies himself as having qualities like omniscience. Right? So the jiva is the one who's creating all this thing. He's in ignorance. Right? So, and then he is Brahman. So then, where is the one that's cognizant of everything that is able to make all this creation? Right? Because the problem is if he's doing this in ignorance, then there's nothing beyond. So that makes them the controller, but then why aren't they in that control? In Vivartavada, Ishwara is in essence an imaginary entity, like thinking a pole is a man. Or it is like dreaming oneself to be king. In the beginning, there was no person identifying himself as Ishwara, like mistaking a pole for a person, whereas scriptures say the Lord is eternal. They explain that one cannot see the Lord created by Jiva's ignorance, since the Lord is beyond the senses of the Jiva. This theory is based only on inference. Right? Even if it's there, then there's just something beyond. They're only dealing with this side of things, so there's no concept of what's beyond, so they can't explain it.
Yes.
They
don't want to explain.
Appears not. They're satisfied
yes.
enough.
Yes.
You know, it's just like the children. Then the mother stepped out for something, and she told them it's cold outside, so play in the house. So when they were going to go outside, they were going to play cricket. Right? So since she said play in the house, that means then they can play cricket in the house. Do they want to think more? No, they're happy. Right? You know, and until this, how you say, this Lord beyond the perception of the senses returns back from the store, then everything will be good. Yeah. See less now. Yeah. On this side, only the tops of the heads.
Yeah. Nice. The modern math is actually based on Jainism.
Oh.
Because the Jains were there, then the astronomers, the Indian astronomers who were famous during the 4th century, Aryabhatta and all, their astronomical ones contained the Vedic as well as the Jainism in it.
Oh, okay.
And then that spread to Arabic.
Okay.
From there, it went to the Western. So most of the Western maths actually contain Jainism.
Okay, as the Jain. Well, therefore, until it's disproved, you can't prove it, so therefore it's okay.
Yes.
It may or may not, a theorem, right? Because it may exist or not exist.
Yes.
But as long as no one's proven it wrong, they're good.
And one of the main topics of mathematics is probability.
Ah.
Yes.
Uncertain, you know,
yes.
Chance.
Mm. Yeah.
Till the time the recent physics and then artificial intelligence came, those are the main topics. Those are the main topics.
Hmm. And it's funny. It's the most solid of sciences, right? And because there's no interpretation. Right? Other sciences like music, there's an interpretation. You can do unlimited things with it. But math, you just do a specific thing, and then they put in the improbability, right? So with the theory that can't explain if anything's there or not, then they're the strongest on having, maybe that's why they do it, because that makes some sense to their life. They have what a
Maharaj. The Jain people, you know, when you find
the Jain people
of all this religion, when you interact with them, those people have no idea absolutely of this kind of philosophy. They just go to the temple, do their good work and everything. And
but that's like
so
that with anything.
Different.
The standard Hindu, does he know any philosophy? No? Standard Sikh, standard Christian, they don't know. They just know that you go here and you pray and then everything, then what do you call it? Your son will pass the exam. That's basically it.
Mm.
So it's just standard. People don't know. But the point is now and again when they bring up a point, then this is the answer. On the other hand, it is acknowledged that the subject of the Lord is understood only by Scripture. The sutras say the Lord is the real creator of the universe, janmadyasya yataha. Thus, this theory is reduced to meaningless words. In all this, the variegated creation involving jiva and pradhan cannot take place without an omniscient person having all shaktis. Thus, the logic supporting an imaginary Lord should be scorned. Paramatma Sandarbha. Right, so you can't get what is means that they just mention about the Lord beyond and that's it, then it's not enough. Right? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-34. The speculative argument of philosophers. This world is real. No, it is not real. It's based upon incomplete knowledge of the Supreme Soul. and is simply aimed at understanding material dualities. Though such argument is useless, persons who have turned their attention away from me, their own true self, are unable to give it up. Mm-hmm. Even though it's a waste of time because they're not interested in the Lord, this is what they have. Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to establish some right and wrong, some authority. Because if you want profit, you have to do what's right. If you do what's wrong, you lose profit. So this point that there has to be a right and wrong, so then they'll apply it in everything. It's just like people argue over, which is the best candy bar or something. And they just will go on and on and on about this. It doesn't matter. Footnote 52. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that devotees are not interested in argument, since they are engaged in bhakti. However, the materialistic philosophers relentlessly argue on the aspect of creation, since they miss the Paramatma, who is transcendental to logical arguments and is known only through realization. Someone may say, learned persons who can destroy doubts can certainly determine the truth. The Lord replies, no, they simply quarrel amongst themselves. Some maintain with proof that the world is real. Some proclaim that the world is false, attacking the first claim. They show lack of knowledge of Paramatma, because Paramatma, understood only by realization, is beyond logical argument. A person fixed in a goal other than me, or a person who is fixed in defeating others' arguments, achieves no results, such as piety, sin, svarga, or hell. Though it is pointless, that person does not stop arguing. This is because of his nature arising from Maya. And so Maya just makes it like this. This is how it's going to work. You don't accept the Lord, then Maya will make it that you'll just argue round and round in circles. It's just because if you're not accepting the Lord, that is the answer. So then you have to argue over something else. And argue they will. That's the way the modes make it.
They don't accept Bhagavan, they don't accept Paramatma. Do they accept some Brahman?
But even that, because it's Brahman is not the ultimate cause. It's the cause, but the ultimate cause is Krishna. So then how do you explain the Brahman and its position and how it has qualities? Unless you know the person. Yeah. How do you explain that the whole thing is controlled? Because of Paramatma. Right? So if you don't have these aspects, if you only have Brahman, you still can't understand. If you just know everything's Brahman and deal with it like that, then you'll function okay, but it's still not the highest position.
Yes, yes, yes. Right? But you see that the Brahma, you can say the Mayavadi, Brahmavadi are more in a strong position than the Jain.
Well, the Jain means that the Mayavadis, at least they're accepting Shastra. So that's a stronger position. Means religiously it's in a stronger position. But philosophically they're not much different. Right? See, the difficulty is the Jains and Buddhists, they don't have the Vedic philosophy or the Vedic religion.
Yes.
Right? Then bringing the impersonalist, the Buddhists back into the Vedic culture, now they have the Vedic religion.
Yes.
But they still don't have the philosophy. Right? So then the only proper thing is you have to have both. Is that something?
Yes. So Maya, it seems like Maya Devi, all she does is, if one doesn't accept the Lord, you're going this way, just move it, and then, so that you go into the infinite regression again.
Yeah, that's samsara. It's just you always think you're moving forward. You don't notice that whether you're going up or down. Because if you're going in the direction you're facing, to you, you're moving forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. I offer my respects to the great Lord of eternal qualities, whose material energy is the cause of agreement and disagreement among those who make philosophies and then argue with others, whose material energy continually bewilders them as the real nature of Atma, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.4.31. Moreover, though they have attained a path to achieve me after many births, they fall from that path. These languages, maybe in Indonesia or other places like that, when they want to say something's bigger, they double it. You have a big house, and then you have a big, big house. No, so this is not Mimi, okay. And you're not talking about don't remember her name, but the Mongolian princess.
I don't know.
No, okay. Those who know the path to attain me, understanding the meanings of the scriptures, take to arguing, have their intelligence turned away from me, who look upon my devotees and know others with mercy. Swalokat. My devotees are not eager for arguments. They make their life successful by thinking of me only, and not about argumentation. It is hinted that one should not waste one's life by inquiry about truth in the world through arguments. Sardartha Darshini 11.22.34. That means you go to hear submissively from the scriptures, from authorities. And then you have doubts, you try to clear the doubts. But just to argue because you can, like that, that should be avoided, because that's just a waste of time. How does that bring out? Because then it has to be service, right? Krishna is only revealed through service. So then we'd have to say the argumentation is service. Right? So then by that service, then you get realization. But we see that it's not counted as realization. Right? It's not counted as service, so it doesn't give that realization. Right? So, means if you want to establish Krishna consciousness, you may have to do, but that's only if it's in a position where you see someone is interested in actually learning what it is. It does work. The walk is when it's coming there, you hear it. Then it gets to here, it's dull, and then when it comes out here, it doesn't. So it may work. Okay.
For example, yesterday when he's visiting other philosophy, it's a service. But yesterday he's visiting other philosophy, like it is like a service.
It's like a service. Yes, because he's establishing the correct philosophy. But just see that people like to argue, that's not a service. It means you can discuss Krishna consciousness, that's fine. But to just argue because there's a taste in arguing, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to get anywhere. Because then an argumentation, then it comes down to basically this, do you want to win the argument or not? You want to win, so what if your position is wrong? So even if you win by some, you know, method, have we established Siddhanta? That's why Krishna says in the Gita that of all the 16 padarthas of logic, he's Siddhanta. He's not any of the other aspects. Right? It means that was the one that all the other aspects are meant to serve. Right? It means he is all of them, of course, but the point being is that that's the one that you're trying to achieve, right? Not winning the argument. Otherwise, Nigrahastan would be the main one, right? So that's the point, is that it's just a matter of what is the actual purpose of the discussion, right? Doesn't mean that a discussion won't come up, But it means that that's not your method of finding out the truth. Yes.
Further, we see that whenever there is a discussion, it's always there is someone who is expressing a doubt and someone who is answering. So, in that sense, like there is always somebody who is a junior and somebody who is a senior.
Junior, yeah.
And there is no question of argumentation in such a atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody is inquiring, and then he has to be submissive in order to learn. Otherwise, there is. In modern time, like you're sitting and sitting, they're equal, you argue, there is never a conclusion because of...
Yes, okay. Yes. Well, there's the idea that the argumentation itself can produce the truth.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know, it's just like the modern system of law. You have someone who's supporting, someone who's against, and then they argue, and then supposedly you'll get the truth out of that. But it's not about necessarily the facts, it's just about who's better at presenting them. So, yes.
We've noticed that in the discussion with devotees, when they bring these ideas from Jainism or Mayavada or Buddhism, then discussion actually doesn't happen because they don't know enough, and as soon as it pops up, and then we present the arguments, and they just drop the topic or get upset and drop the topic, or somehow the debate doesn't happen in actuality because people don't have enough knowledge to discuss.
Yes. But if something else that they may. On some health thing or some political thing or social thing, then that they can go all day. But the point is you can't get the truth from it because it has to be based on what scriptures say, what do the acharyas say, and then it's a matter of applying it, not whether it's correct or not.
Yeah. So basically, everybody goes home with their own opinion. Whatever was there mustn't happen, like really no change.
Yeah, that's why it says it's a waste of time. Devotees don't get into that. They may from their previous, samskaras, but the point is that it's not a way to find out the truth. Because sometimes it's thought, okay, we have differences of opinion, bring everyone together, we'll have a discussion or a debate, and this way we'll find the truth. But this saying here, Vishwanath and Bhagavatam saying that you'll not find the truth that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not something to do like that. So you have to, it's done. Like we saw Baladev Vidyabhushan went to, present our philosophy like that because they expected us to have one. In the form of Vedanta Sutra, as a commentary on it. So then he produced. Then they had to accept this as a bona fide sampradaya. Our Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went to the pundits and presented. But it wasn't an argument. That's the thing, is they're expecting an argument, but it wasn't. Because he came there and first established from scripture the glory of the Brahmins. Right? And so then they can't complain about that. And so they're going to have to accept him and that what he says and all that is correct. It's from scriptures and all that. Then once he's done that, then he goes and shows that the elevated position of the Brahmin, how they're better than all other, positions amongst the living entities, then how amongst the Brahmins, then the best of the Vaishnavas. So Vaishnavas are beyond the position of Brahmin. So then there is no argument. Whether they appreciate it or not is another thing, but there's no argument, really. Because as soon as you get into the argument, then it doesn't really go well. Like, you see, even Prabhupada would be discussing and someone would make a point, and then Prabhupada would make a point. It might come back with something, but then it would go and it wouldn't be an argument anymore. Because otherwise, then, like we said, the brahmacharis on the veranda after 10 o'clock at night, then get into their various arguments and all that and go on for hours and like this. And, yeah. I'm not sure who it was. Maybe it was Kirtanananda Prabhu or something mentioned he made the statement, amongst brahmacharis, any discussion after 10 o'clock at night is maya. You know, it's not going to be get any spiritual result.
You miss the mangalarti.
Sorry?
You miss the mangalarti also.
Hmm? Mangalarti. Yes, yes, like that. In establishing the truth.
Yeah. Maharaj, regarding this argument, there was a king, Jain king.
A Jain king.
King in south, and he and Ramanujacharya was on his tour of converting everybody into Vaishnavas. So then when he visits this particular place called as Tondanur in Karnataka, so what happens is that this king says that I will accept Vaishnavism only if you defeat all my Jain Brahmanas, you know, who are there in my assembly. Mm-hmm. So then he says, on one condition, that when I'll face the Jains, I'll have a curtain between them and me. So he says, okay, that's fine. So then the curtain has been put up, and Ramanujacharya is on one side, and all the 1,000 Jains on the other side. Mm-hmm. And the Acharya, he manifests his 1,000 hoods of Anantashesh. Mm-hmm. And one hood is arguing with every one of them, and all of them are simultaneously defeated, and everybody, you know, takes shelter of. So this is all.
Okay.
Yeah, we converted into Vaishnavas.
Yeah. It just means this argumentation as a method of finding the truth, that's not what we're doing. We're speaking the Shastra and establishing that. It's not an argument because it's not our opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes even when devotees, they try to discuss Mahabharata, they go into argumentation and do not come to a conclusion. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is about secondary and not the primary.
Mm. Yeah. Sutra 2.2.34 Evam chatma kartsnyam. Evam, thus, cha, and atma, soul, akartsnyam, not wholeness. The atma would lose its completeness due to not fitting properly in various bodies. Yeah, because it's the full size of the body, but what happens if the body's small or big? You know, so you have an ant that's got this huge monster subtle body, you know, like that. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar herein refutes the Jain standpoint of the soul having the same size as the material body it possesses, which contradicts the standpoints of transmigration and immortality of the soul. The Sutrakar later in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.21 Swa Sabdan Mana Bhyam Cha establishes with scriptural evidence that the jivatma, the individual spirit soul, is atomic in size. Esho nurd atma, the atma is atomic. Mundaka Upanishad 3.19 And balagra sata bhagasya, the jiva is known to be a hundredth part of a hundredth part of a tip of a hair, and is qualified for liberation. Svetasutara Upanishad 4.9 Hence the Jain's doctrine about equating the soul's size to the body's size is systematically refuted. Sri Govindavasya.
Their idea about the size of the soul, for them, it's not uncertain.
It seems to be they have their points that are means they're certain about their uncertainty.
Yes.
You know.
But here they make the point that the body is the soul, you know, same size.
Yes.
And this, for them, it is sure. It's not maybe yes, maybe not.
No, that's the difficulty. They have their system, which they fully accept. But in their system, they're saying that you can't, it means nothing's for certain.
Yes.
They're very certain about that nothing's for certain. Like, you know, the only absolute truth is there's no absolute truth. But why are they so, how do they know that's the absolute truth? Because if there's no absolute truth, then that's not an absolute point. So it may be, it's totally wrong.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, it's like that. It's whatever they feel, then that always becomes the correct thing. And all these things are in connection with anything outside.
Okay.
Right? You know, it's just like yourself. The field of activities is the body.
Mm-hmm.
Then the body perceives the world, you know, through the body. And so then there's you, and then there's the world. So whatever you think about yourself, he takes that as absolute truth. And then whatever there is about the world, then, you know, as far as you're concerned, it's correct, but as far as everybody else is concerned, you know, how they view it and everything, then there's that element of uncertainty, because you don't know if they'll actually do what you want them to or not. You know.
There is the scientist Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
The?
Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Uncertainty principle.
Uncertainty, and then it's a principle.
Oh yeah, it's an uncertainty principle. Yeah. That's the fun part, and they don't notice it because of the modes of nature. Krishna just arranges it by the modes. They can't understand how foolish they're sounding. Shigovindabhasya. Just as it is a fault that contrary qualities inhere in one's substance in their theory, it is also a fault that the Atma is incomplete, akartsnyam, in their theory. They say that the jiva is the size of the body. Thus the size of the Atma in an infant would not fit properly in the body of a young man. If the Atma, the size of a human body, entered an elephant body by his karma, he would not be able to experience happiness and pain in all limbs, since the soul would not extend to all parts of the elephant's body. And if the human Atma attained a mosquito body, it would not fit that body at all. Yeah, I mean, what would fit? Bhagavatam verse reference. Right, because they'll take it as grown adults. But then if it's there, they'll start off small. So if it's that, then how is it? So they're not saying that the soul is growing and shrinking. You know, that's the Bhagavatam verse reference. 6.16.9. The living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies, yet he does not belong to the bodily category. The living being is so sublime that he is equal to quality in the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy, and thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. 4.20.11. Anyone who knows this material body, made of the five gross elements, the sense organs, the working senses, and the mind, is simply supervised by the Anyone knows that his material body is simply supervised by the fixed soul is eligible to be liberated from material bondage. And so when you understand that this soul is separate from and simply observing, right, then one is eligible to be liberated. But as long as you think you are the body, it won't work. Yes.
So they actually can distinguish between the Atma and the consciousness which pervades the body.
Yes. Yeah, so that's what they're taking, is that the soul is there, but by consciousness they pervade the whole body. But they're trying to say, no, the Atma is that size. So all these philosophies you see is that they're equating qualities of one thing to another. It's not clear.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So
they don't know things as they are.
Sorry?
They don't know things as they are.
No.
Because they're not based on Vedas.
No, they're not based on Vedas. Yes. 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 Srimad Bhagavatam 5.10.10. Fatness, thinness, bodily and mental distress, thirst, hunger, fear, disagreement, desires for material happiness, old age, sleep, attachment for material possessions, anger, lamentation, illusion, and identification of the body with the self are all transformations of the material covering of the spirit soul. A person absorbed in the material bodily conception is affected by these things, but I am free from all bodily conceptions. Consequently, I am neither fat nor skinny, nor anything else you have mentioned. Is this the Python Sadhu?
Jarabharat.
Oh, Jarabharat. Okay, yeah, because the Python Sadhu is this canto.
He also is the same canto.
He also is not fat or thin.
Yeah. Although both look quite fat.
Yes, look quite fat. Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, the list. And all that's not, because we identify with all of those things. Right? You know. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.73. There are two kinds of bodies for every individual soul. A gross body made of five gross elements and a subtle body made of three subtle elements. Within these bodies, however, the spirit is the spirit soul. One must find the soul by analysis, saying, this is not it, this is not it. Thus one must separate spirit from matter. Right, so that's what we're doing in here, is understanding what is the spiritual and what's the material. Because even though by words, by the concepts, they may appear to be spiritual, they're not. That's the important element. Okay, footnote 53. Srila Prabhupada suggests to use the neti-neti process along with the guidance from an acharya in order to determine the spirit soul within the body, matter. As previously stated, svarnam yata gravashu hema kara kshetreshu yogaistad abhigya apnuyat. An expert in the study of soil can find out where gold is and then dig there. He can then analyze the stone and test the gold with nitric acid. Similarly, one must analyze the whole body to find within the body the spirit soul. In studying one's own body, one must ask himself whether his head is his soul, his fingers are his soul, his hand is his soul, and so on. In this way, one must gradually reject all the material elements and the combinations of material elements in the body. Then, if one is expert and follows the acharya, he can understand that he is the spirit soul living within the body. The greatest acharya, Krishna, begins his teachings in Bhagavad Gita by saying, Dehinosmin yata dehe kaumaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuhyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.13. The spirit soul possesses the body and is within the body. This is the real analysis. The soul never mixes with the bodily elements. Although the soul is within the body, it is separate and always pure. One must analyze and understand this, his self. This is self-realization. Neti-neti is the analytical process of rejecting matter. By expertly conducting such an analysis, one can understand where the soul is. One who is not expert, however, cannot distinguish gold from earth, nor the soul from the body. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter, you analyze by what we've heard from scripture and what we're given by the acharyas. Then we make analysis. Sutta 2.235. Nacha paryayad apya virodho vikarad hibhyaha. Not cha and paryayat. Because of the assumption of sequential change. Api, also, avirodaha, non-contradiction. Vikaradibhya, because it would be open to the objection of change, etc. The problem of Atma's size cannot be removed by proposing that the Atma changes its size, because then it would be subject to change. Right? You can't say, oh no, but then, weren't there an elephant body, then it becomes bigger. But that means then the soul's not stable. It changes its size, because then, you know, then it's the size of a mosquito, then it's the size of an elephant. Sutra Prakashita. The Jains may claim that in accordance with the doctrine of uncertainty, the soul's size is indefinite and can therefore change to fit the size of any body it may enter. That would mean the soul's size is subject to change. Such an idea is false and hence refuted by the Sutrakar in his later work, in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.18. Ukranti gatya gatinam, which confirms the soul's size is fixed and atomic, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. He further proves in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.23-24. Avstiti vaisheshyad idichen nabhyu pagamat hridi hi and gunadva alokatvat alokavat. That the jiva situated in the heart spreads throughout the body like a drop of sandalwood oil because of its quality of consciousness, just as the sun spreads its light in the sky. This refutes the opponent's belief that the soul adopting itself in accordance to its bodily size. Right? Because then if it's uncertainty, then how can you say that it does? Because then it could be you have elephant-sized soul in the trying to fit into the body of a mosquito. Yeah. Find out who organized the Big Bang Theory, and then they can maybe squish them in that way. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The Atma has unlimited parts. What?
Vyasing.
Okay. The Atma has unlimited parts. In occupying an infant or youth body or an elephant body, its size would not be different from the particular body because it can decrease or increase its parts. End quote. This cannot be. Why? Because then the Atma would be subject to transformation. Vikaradi biha. But you say that the Atma is without change. Because karmas or acts already performed would be destroyed and new ones created without having acted. Footnote 34. By accepting a body too big, one could not experience all the limbs. By accepting a body too small, the jiva would extend beyond the body and experience karmas of other bodies. Right, that would really be a problem. Yeah, you're sitting on the subway, you know, because the satellite extends beyond, you know, it doesn't fit, the soul doesn't fit. Then the guy who sits next to you go, oh, not this guy again, right? You know, so, then yeah, I got to go through all his experiences. Yeah, then he just turned to him and said, just eat the donut.
So Maharaj, we don't accept the presence of the Lord. We create so many imaginations.
Yes, yes. You can see is that there are individuals that really think about these things and come up with some very amazing things. And then others who aren't in that capacity, though they like to be thoughtful, but not that much, then they'll just follow.
Yes.
And now and again, there's a difficulty in an area, then somebody will think and try to resolve that problem. And then you get a various branches in that, or some new philosophy.
Yes.
But otherwise, yeah, it's... Yeah, the modes of nature make people waste their time.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing. Because it's the Lord's energy, that's why it's amazing. Because if it was up to us, would we come up with so many philosophies? No. Like that. So then it's the Lord's modes of nature that allow all this variety to come up. So if they can come up with so many amazing philosophies, that means how amazing is the Lord, then, who's simply just a part of his energy is causing that to happen. So then he must be so much more wonderful.
We learn this philosophy around the body, spirit, soul. So many times it happens we misapply in the application. We don't take care of the body at all, or we end up like over care. So, what is the proper balance for the application of this philosophy, not being the body but the soul?
That we're servant of Krishna. But we're not servant of the body, but we're servant of Krishna. What can you use to serve Krishna? The body. So therefore you take care of the body, how much is necessary, so it can serve Krishna. Yes. That's the main thing. Because karmas for acts already performed would be destroyed, and new ones created without having acted, right? Because the ones that should happen, right? Because if the soul is in the elephant body and they were a mosquito in their last life, then they wouldn't be able to, you know, deal with, who know, where would they situate themselves, in the little tip of the nose? Or, I mean, where would they be? So that means things that should happen to the other parts of the body won't happen because they're not big enough to. You know, or if it's bigger than the body, then karmas that, you know, you shouldn't be having, that, you know, your neighbor or something like that, then you get. Right? He's got indigestion. Now you have indigestion because the bodies are overlapping, the souls are overlapping, right? So, not good, right? Or you just ate lunch and now he hasn't, so he's hungry. Now you become hungry or he becomes full or, you know, how does this work? Right. Yeah, so it's not good. So without having acted, the theory is useless. They say that the jiva has no transformation when he is liberated, since the size is permanent without receiving a body. This is a foolish argument, since according to the theory, the jiva in liberation can have no permanence at all, because it must be created and uncreated, existing and non-existing, right? So they're talking about this eternal position, but according to them, they don't again, nothing exists and nothing's permanent. Nothing is, you know, the soul's unchanging, but they're saying it's changing and this and that. You know, say, oh, but in this liberated state, then what is there, right? Because then, you know, there's nothing at all, right? Because again, they're just another kind of impersonal aspect. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.38. Brahman, the eternal soul, was never born and will never die, nor does it grow or decay. The spirit soul is actually the knower of the youth, middle age, and death of the material body. Thus the soul can be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere at all times and never being destroyed. Just as the life air within the body, although one, becomes manifest as many, in contact with the various material senses. The one soul appears to assume various material designation in contact with the material body.
So we know that the eternal associates of the Lord, they are their bodies, and some of them jiva tattva. So their body is Satchitananda and the jiva is Satchitananda. So the size of the jiva, is it the same size as it is here?
From what I can understand, they expand to that size of the body. You know, so because it's because it's a matter of the expression of the relationship, the rasa, with Krishna. So it's not a problem. You know, just like Krishna is unlimited, but he takes that particular size in the pastime, right?
Yeah.
To match the pastime.
Yeah.
You know, so when he's baby Krishna, he's that size. When he's a youth, he's that size.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just, it's a matter of the rasa. So by the effect of the internal potency, then, you know, it all works out. You know, so they'll mix these kind of things up, and that's the problem. They catch a little something here and there, a little bit left over in their memory from previous, and then come up with their own philosophy. So, you know, so there's a good chance all these, you know, Jains become mathematicians. Yeah, because the philosophy is very similar. And Jains are into math, you know, astronomy, that kind of thing. So then you see they go into the nuclear physics and stuff like that and have the same philosophy. You know, and then next life, according to the philosophy, is uncertain. You don't know where they're going to be. Yeah.
This is like the condition soul, because he has to go through the 84 lakh species, then he has to have a size which
it fits into all of them.
Yes, that's where the atomic size
right
is for a conditioned soul, because then by the liberated soul he acts on the soul platform. So
he doesn't have to be atomic in size. So yeah, when they're covered and all that, then somehow in the material world, then they take on that quality, that size.
So that applies only here.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, technically, it's one of those points that it doesn't really matter.
Yes.
You know, because being servant of Krishna, that's the primary quality. And these others, then we have to remember, is that Krishna's yoga maya. She takes care of all these things. Because you don't have to worry about it. You know, it's just like you don't have to worry about growing. Right? Little kids don't have to sit there and meditate on growing. You know, it just happens. It's all arranged. You know, you eat food, it digests. You know, it's like you're not sitting there and doing anything about it. You know? So, like that, it doesn't really matter. It may get into a very important point of the topic, but that was covered in the previous point that Krishna made. Is people like to argue just under the modes of nature, just to argue, just something to argue about. But otherwise, what's the point? How is it important? You know what I'm saying? Here, that's the size we are. There, whatever the size we are there. But that's not really an important thing. We may make it important because of the time and space, you know, continuum or whatever. But it's not really important. Because it's what you do with your size, that's what's important.
Yeah, it's just some devotees, they worry that, is it going to be, say, me when I go there? Because
who else will it be? They expect it to, you know, when they get there, then they'll be, Tolstoy or something? Or, you know, what do they think? You know? But they don't have to worry, even if they get there and they're Tolstoy, since they, you know, everything's working on the more natural kind of environment. They don't need refrigerators, and therefore, because they don't have the refrigerators, they don't have ice. Because they don't have ice, they don't have ice picks. Right?
Ice?
Picks.
I don't know.
Ice picks? It's this big kind of, it's an iron rod that's very sharp and thin, and at one end it has something to hold. And they use it for hitting the ice and breaking into pieces and stuff like that. From what I remember, he was killed by an ice pick. So they don't have to worry.
Even in Paramatma Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami just makes one statement in this regard. That I don't remember the exact statement, but it is made like, it is just an inference that Jiva is an atomic size. Means it's made only that. That means don't worry how you will be after you go.
Yeah, because the point is it's for here, because the soul is covered by the modes of nature and all that. The one spiritual body is covered by these other things, so it doesn't matter. So that's the size that you're functioning at. So these other things don't matter. It's just like, at lunch today, and you have, if there's potatoes, then worrying about the particular type of peeler that's being used and what technique and this and that, and getting into things that don't really affect the overall point. Does that make sense? What size is the potato peeler? You know, it doesn't really matter. Why? It does matter.
So when we came to India, it's a complete different thing. So to operate it, it's not easy. So we brought our own.
Yeah. Okay. But the point is that if the potatoes are peeled, what does it matter? You use the sideways peeler, the long ways peeler, you use a knife, you put it in that machine, it just moves them around and grinds the peels off. You know, you boil it and then afterwards peel the peels off. You know, it means as long as there's no peels, you're good. Yeah. The only time you have to have peels is if it's a pizza in a wood oven. You understand? Without a peel, you can't get it in the oven or take it out. Does that make sense? No. That funny kind of shovel thing that they use?
Oh, yeah.
That's called a peel.
Oh, yeah.
So that peel you want. Why it's called a peel, I don't know, but it's called a peel.
When I first got to that inference statement, I was so excited that now maybe we'll get something more. And then after the whole Paramahansa Sangha finished, kind of convinced myself, okay, then nobody would like to discuss anything more.
No, it doesn't matter, because it's a thing that doesn't really matter. Oh, this would probably be even more important, probably more fitting. What kind of box the peeler came in? You know, was it a big box, small box, you know, thin cardboard, bigger cardboard, was it a plastic box that had a wrapping on the outside or not, what color it was, you know, all these things, that's what doesn't matter. So, you know, if somehow the we're not doing well in the peeler vod philosophy, so then we'll switch to what about the box? It really doesn't matter, you know, like that.
But Maharaj, this is a tendency to go to all the detail.
Yes, you go to the wrong detail and make a whole thing out of it, and then the correct detail, like surrender to Krishna and do everything just to please Krishna, but that's not the discussion. You know, of course, that's there. There's nothing to argue about. So then what's the fun? We're arguing over the point that there's, you know, no importance, so we can argue, right? Footnote 55. Did we finish this? I don't remember finishing. Thus the soul can be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere at all times and never being destroyed, just as the life air within the body, although one becomes manifest as many in contact with the various material senses. The one soul appears to assume various material designations in contact with the material body, right? So the life air is one, but in contact with the body, then it takes on the 10 kinds of life airs, right? The 5 main, and then each of them have a function, but that function does 2 things. Like if it's the air that expands, that means it also contracts, so that way you get 10.
Yes.
Is that sense? Yeah. But otherwise, it's one life air. Mm-hmm. It's not 10. You know, but I can do it diagonally. Does that mean I have an extra one?
This is certain, Mark.
Huh?
Is certain?
Yes. Okay, footnote 55. The BBT purport explains that the Lord's external potency is subject to transformation, such as birth, growth, death, etc. However, the Lord's internal potency, the jiva, is not subject to these changes. The Vedic aphorism, sarvam kalvidam brahma, everything is Brahman, has been explained in this chapter of Bhagavatam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original source of everything. By expanding his internal potency, he manifests the spiritual world. And by expanding his external potency, he manifests the material cosmos. The conditioned living entity is originally part and parcel of the superior internal potency of the Lord, but being in contact with illusory falls under the clutches of the external potency. In any case, since everything is an expansion of the potency of the Supreme Brahman, everything is part and parcel of the Lord's spiritual potency. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesyatasyad ishad apetasya viparyayo smitihi. When a living entity thinks that the material world is not part and parcel of the Lord's potency, but is a separate existence, liable to be controlled and enjoyed by the tiny jiva soul, He is under viparyayaha, or a wrong conception, asmitihi. Thus the living entity forgets that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, everything being an expansion of the Lord. So the thing is that we're forgetting is that also in this thing with the size of the jiva, you know, connected to the spiritual world, is that the material world is controlled by time and space, not the spiritual world. And so we're trying to project our conditioning of time and space onto the spiritual world and then trying to find an answer, which we won't find. Srila Sridhar Swami has pointed out that although the Lord's external potency is subject to transformations such as birth, growth, decay, and death, one should not foolishly conclude that the Lord's internal potency, the living entity, is also subject to these changes. Both the living entity and material nature are ultimately Brahman, being expansions of the Supreme Brahman. But the Vedas clearly say, Parashya Shakir Vibhidhaiva Shriyate. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1365 purport. The Lord's potencies are vividha or multifarious. Thus, according to this verse, natma janana jajana na marishyati naidate sau na shiyate. The soul is never born, nor does he die, and he certainly cannot grow or decay like a material body. Although the visible material body passes through boyhood, adolescence, and old age, or although one may take birth as a demigod, human being, plant, or animal, the spirit soul never changes its eternal constitutional position. Rather, he falsely identifies with the external transformations of the material body, and thus imposes upon himself a psychological condition called illusion. This miserable illusory experience of seeing oneself transformed and ultimately annihilated by the laws of nature can be nullified by transcendental knowledge of one's eternal status as the superior energy of the Lord. Interesting, they always say about, you know, birth, then youth, then old age. Notice middle age is left out. Because once you attain youth, and you always think, identify with that until you notice that things just don't work anymore. Then only you kind of agree that maybe things aren't working as well as they should.
Right? It's also interesting, Srila Prabhupada says, birth, death, old age, and disease.
Yeah.
He goes, like, there's no gap.
Yeah, no gap. You're born, and then after that you die. There's some time spent on a banana peel in between.
When devotee is putting body, B-O-D-Y, birth, old age, disease, and jandur.
Oh, I see, yeah. Yes, why not? So Sutra 2236, the Jain theory of liberation is criticized. Antya vaskites chobhaya nitya tvad avisheshat. Antya vastite, in the final state, cha, and, ubhaya, both, nitya tvad, of being permanent, avisheshat, because of there being no difference. The Jain theory is untenable because liberation is like bondage, which is eternal. Sutta Prakashika. The Jain concept of two types of liberation, suspension in the aloka akasha and endless upward motion, is neither a transcendental situation for the soul, nor will it ever satisfy the soul. Such an idea is false and hence refuted by the Sutrakar. Sri Govindabhasya. The word not, is understood from the last sutra. The Jain philosophy is incorrect because of the nondescript condition, avisheshat, of liberation, anya vastite, It is not distinguishable from the state of bondage. Why? Because of the description of both types of liberation. Liberation is described as continuously going upwards or being situated in the Akash without a planet. Both these states of liberation are eternal, but no one can be happy by moving upwards continually or remaining without a shelter. In both conditions of liberation, they would suffer as in bondage. One cannot argue that there is no suffering of a person in that condition as there would be for a person with a body, since even in the liberation of the Atma would have heaviness because of limbs of the Atma, right? Because he has the size of the body, and he has limbs, right? One cannot say that both conditions are eternal, since anything created must be destroyed. Right? So that's the whole point, that's why we say there's the eternal position, the eternal relation. So it's not that you're creating a spiritual body. Yeah.
It's interesting to see, like, the Vaishyas, their quality is perpetual idea of gaining perpetual wealth, increase of wealth. That the quality of Vaishya is so, the perpetual increase of
wealth. Yeah.
So here also they want perpetually
go up. Yeah. Mm. But the only thing is they're not collecting any money, so how will they be happy? Yes.
Football is liberated state. It's going up always.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Therefore, the Jain doctrine is insignificant and the object of scorn. The Jains, in teaching what is contrary to the Vedas, that the universe is existent and non-existent, and that Brahman mentioned in the Upanishads cannot be described, and the Mayavadis who teach similar concepts are hereby refuted. Right, so anything that's not, you have these philosophies that come up by the modes of nature. So there's going to be, because of the modes, many times very common points amongst their philosophies. So in dealing with one, then you deal with all of them that have that same kind of point. Right, so you're studying each one in their whatever it is that the aspects that are unique to them. And so then, but at the same time, others may have the same point. So it applies there just as well. Mm-hmm. So even though it's being taken from the Jains here, it applies in any other philosophy, it's applied. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So in studying, there are six schools, but the point is since there's common points, you just have to be able to deal with those points and establish what is the actual proper Siddhanta. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And Maharaj, if we don't do that, the tendency is to argue.
Yeah, then you argue.
Because it's very popular to argue.
Very popular. Arguing is very, very popular. Because if it wasn't, then how would the world go on? Right? You know, it's like that, what do you call it? That you know, that pleasant... a kind of old song, you know, argument makes the world go round. Right? You don't know that one?
No? I've heard something, but I don't remember details.
Okay. No?
They're representing non-Vedic principles, and we are refuting them as establishing the Vedic principles.
Yeah, because the point is the Vedic principles are the actual point, because it's coming from the Shastras, coming from Krishna. Others are coming up with other philosophies, so the point is how it's not the real philosophy, that's the point. And establishing the actual philosophy, that's the argument. Right? In other words, it's not that they have this point and so then there's a counter-argument on that level. No, it's always in comparison to what's the actual truth, what's Siddhanta. So that's the point that you're comparing it. You're comparing it against yourself, not the logic of it. Others say, no, but the soul can take various sizes like that. But the soul doesn't do that. They're in one size. You know? That's the point. So they don't do that. Yeah? Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference 11:14:9. O best among men, the intelligence of human beings is bewildered by my illusory potency, And thus, according to their own activities and whims, they speak in innumerable ways about what is actually good for people. Right? They have so many ideas of what's good. Because they're not going by what Krishna says. Right? Otherwise, we have so many ideas. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.9. Sukadeva Goswami continues speaking to Maharaj Purkin. My dear king, the king of Kanka, Venka, and Kutaka, whose name was Arhat, heard of the activities of Rishabdev, and, imitating Rishabdev's principles, introduced a new system of religion. Taking advantage of Kali Yuga, the age of sinful activity, King Arhat, being bewildered, gave up the Vedic principles, which are free from risk, and concocted a new system of religion opposed to the Vedas. That was the beginning of the Jain Dharma. Many other so-called religions followed this atheistic system. Right? Mm-hmm. So from that, so many others get their philosophies and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's like we see is that at the beginning of the Treta Yuga, then that king was inspired then to establish Yajna. Right? It's an eternal principle, but that's when it came up. You know, the same way as then, you know, when it's the right time, then here Arhat, then he became inspired to, you know, come up with this philosophy. Mm-hmm. And interesting is he's Arhat, so that's the Sanskrit, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have in these all these funny Oriental philosophies like that, the great their saints are called Arhats. Mm-hmm. So I guess he's the Adi Arhat.
Maybe the Mahavir saint.
Maharhat. Hari, Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.